I don't, it's so much out here. It wouldn't hurt for them to allow the basket weavers or to have an area just to keep. Depend on somebody else doing it for you. It doesn't work.
Welcome to the Intentional Fire Podcast. This podcast is a collaboration between the Kudyk Tribe's Department of Natural Resources and the Southwest Climate Adaptation Science Center, or Southwest CASC. This podcast builds off of a report called Good Fire. The report, commissioned by the Kudyk Tribe, describes the barriers to intentional burning and identifies potential solutions. Ayuki.
My name is Vicki Preston, and I am a Kudyk, Yurok, Paiute, and Pitt River Indigenous Auntie, artist, and community member. I live in the area of Takasthuf Katathuf, or Perch Creek, in the larger area known as Orleans, California. I grew up in and around Orleans and have lived mostly at the mouth of Red Cap Creek, where my grandparents have their home. Our relationship to fire is multifaceted. Most people who live here have wood stoves. We have all seen many smokehouse fires, cooking fires, ceremonial fires, on smaller, more contained scales. On a little larger scale, growing up, I'd watch my grandpa burn. I sometimes got to help him and knew people in our area who also burn piles, brush, and understory. The inspiration to learn more about fires and the health of our ecosystems stemmed from this history, along with my own moral beliefs from ceremony and a desire to use Indigenous tools to live in Indigenous ways. To build this understanding of fire as a piece of my own understanding of what it means to be an Indigenous person, I've branched into work I currently do at the Kudyk Tribe's Department of Natural Resources as a cultural resources technician. A lot of my moral beliefs started before my job now, and my cultural basis was largely learned outside of work. But my current job is a place where I use a lot of these skills. Cultural resources is archaeology and traditional ecological knowledge, and much of our work is to restore prescribed burning practices to Kudyk Aboriginal territory. This podcast came from a collaboration found through my work at DNR. This podcast was created to amplify the voices of Indigenous people along the Klamath River and nearby places. And with this work, we want to center conversations around fire in the various ways it's present in our lives. This interview was conducted in the early summer of 2021. Well, Verna Reese, or Verna, is a Kudyk master basket weaver. She's taught many people over the years and still teaches every week in Orleans and Happy Camp. We know Verna as a weaver and a gracious and powerful teacher. She's always down to gather and weave. Over the years, she's presented in many forums. Verna has been an advocate for burning, especially for basket materials and other cultural areas. Her and other basket weavers have led the push for this, continue to push for Indigenous-led burning and continuance of traditional practices. I want to preface this episode by letting folks know. We will talk about the Slater Fire of 2020. The event was very difficult, and people are still living through the aftermath. We have fire burning upriver, and our lives continue to be affected. Verna's a very hard worker, and I respect her dearly. She's my basket weaver teacher as I work on my first baby basket. In the last year, having been going to classes, Verna's taught me so much. I love her and her husband, Frank. Enjoy going over to her house and weaving with her, hanging out with her dogs. And I'm so glad that we get to finally put this interview with her out there because I feel like she has a very important view. Thank you. And here's Verna's interview. So introduce yourself however way you want to. You can say who you are, where you live, or where you're from, however you feel like introducing yourself.
Well, I'm Verna Reese. Maiden name McNeil, actually from Forks of Salmon, Methodist Creek, but living here in Orleans now. Basket weaver, gatherer.
Teacher.
Yes, when I turned school age, I had to go to the city, or Big Arcata. Mom had to work. I went to Humboldt State Elementary School up there.
You ever get to go up the Salmon River and go to Forks at all?
Well, I don't go out there that much. BLM bulldozed the house and took the land, I guess.
They can do that?
They did.
How come they decided they wanted the land?
I don't know.
They didn't say why, they just...
Oh, well, they told me that there was no way I could feed a family on that land. And I kept telling them we're not farmers, we were gatherers. Completely different. I guess their rules are for people back east.
Farmland, flat.
Yeah, and I couldn't support a family on that. I fought it for years, but so I'm too old now.
So then they just came in and did they give you time to move out?
Oh, we was there. We go up there in the summertime. It's a family home.
Did they give you a warning when they were going to bulldoze it?
No. No, they just said that I have no more appeals. Yeah. Thing I know, they said that they bulldozed down the house. Well, a Forest Service guy went and got the place, said it was his, and then he rented it out to hippies, found out he wasn't supposed to have anything. Yeah, so it was a big mess, and I couldn't fight him.
Gosh, I didn't know about that. No one lives there now? You ever grew up there?
No, there's nothing there. Just a flat piece of land.
So, you've been basket weaving for how long now? When did you first start learning?
40 years now.
Were you gathering before that? Or did you start gathering around the same time, too?
No, when I first moved back to Siskiyou County, I lived in Washington, and I moved back to Happy Camp. And Madeline and Grace were having basket class there, so I was taking it, and Grace and I hit it off, and she just taught me everything I needed to know, gathering baskets. Oh, she was so nice. Yeah, we just loved to go out in the hills, and springtime was flower time. And
you lived in Happy Camp that whole time?
No, I moved to Thompson Creek or Syed for about 15 years, and then I moved back to Happy Camp.
Has there been numbers of weavers? Has that fluctuated? Do you feel like there's more or less?
I think there's more now than back then.
Were they able to do any learning back then?
No.
Or did you chase wildfires?
Wildfires. When they logged, they'd cut all the stuff down, and we'd go in and get the cut stuff. I always called it roadkill. It's a Caltrans that cut along the road, and we'd go and get that stuff.
When did folk come to talk about burning for basket materials and stuff specifically? And what did that look like?
Well, I don't really know when we did it, but I know we had Forest Service people, rangers. We'd always talk to them and stuff and ask them. You had some that was open to it and worked towards it, but it's a long process. They have a NEPA, they gotta have all this thing. But they'd work through and they'd start burning. And then you have that ranger leave, and then we'd have another one that didn't give a hoot. So it's a process. I mean, we go through so many rangers up in Happy Camp. But we got where we're more vocal about it and go in there and touch bases. And a lot of them, the workers that work the fire, they're kind of our local people. So they knew what I was going through, and they really kind of pushed. It was kind of hard to, you know, push wanting this stuff to be done when there's so few. So I've got basket weavers come and start gathering so that they've seen that we are gathering. Well, we got a good burn on there now.
Whether you wanted it or not.
Yeah.
It seems like the rangers is usually about 5 years or so, and then they kind of switch out.
Right.
And the same with all of their positions, really. And then you have to start fresh with someone.
Yeah, the guy that was there from Alaska, he was so good. He'd go out walk with us, and we'd tell him, you know, what Hazel looked like before and after, and, you know, he was interested in what we was talking about, you know, and then he went back and got things going. They say, well, we have rules and stuff. Well, he kind of bent them.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it takes a lot of the time, is just prioritizing that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because it has benefits besides just weavers, too, so. That east side, that part that burned a few years or more back, where there's Hazel and Happy Camp, is that due to be burned again?
I don't even know the ranger up there. The new one that got.
Yeah, he just got in there this year, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, that came up in our meeting earlier this morning, though, if that would be an area that would need to be burned again. Maybe they could burn it.
Well, they need to keep it burnt.
To keep it open.
Because all that brush is coming back.
Yeah.
That's what happened at the Slater fire when they had the big fire up there before. They went and planted and everything, but never thinned. Let the brush go up. Mm-mm. That's always the money. They don't have money to have people go and thin it, you know, to take care of it. But after that fire, it seemed like they would.
Wondering if they should burn that willow down there, too. Some of these river bars with the willow, even if we're not burning just for the bugs or whatever, it'd be nice to just clear some of it out.
Yeah, it's too much overgrown stuff.
As far as, like, prescribed burning, do you feel like now people are just doing it a lot more?
Yes.
And are they able to do it for basket weavers more so? Do you think that's gotten any better?
Yeah, down here in Orleans, I believe they did a lot more for the basket weavers, because my sister Florence and Willis used to tell me where it's at. You know, they did this for Beargrass, and they kept me updated on where.
Do they do a pretty good job, or do you think they could still do more?
They were doing real good. They, like the Beargrass, you have to have the canopy.
Yeah, they like to have some canopy.
Yeah, so that they're not out in the open and growing thick and brittle. Yeah. And they did that, and they did real good. It's always good material up there. Yeah, you have the coastal air and then the heat.
We were talking this morning on the phone, and I was hoping to get some more hazel burn down here in this area, amongst other things. So hopefully this fall we'll be able to burn some more stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that the burns, they do it. You burn in the spring, and then you have until the next spring to gather.
I wish we burn more in the spring, just as much as in the fall.
You know, after rains and snow and all that stuff.
They do have windows, you know, like good times to burn. But it seems like a lot of the agencies take time off during that time of year because it's not fire season. I know that's part of it anyways. Because a lot of the hazel, yeah, that's the best time to burn it in the springtime so that it can have that whole year to come back.
So I wanted to touch on something that I know you've been involved in over the years, which is following the smoke.
Following the smoke was happening quite a while ago.
Yes, it is. It made it more visible for all parties to really get more people that get together like that and educate people. They seem to listen to that. And then you or I going in and...
individually. And what is following the smoke?
Following the smoke was where they kind of had teachers and stuff. They had them. Well, that's passport into time, and follow the smoke was all part of that. To educate people on basket weaving. It was more teachers for passport into time. Well, that made a lot better because the teachers and stuff was more educated in our culture. They'd go out and... I think that was a good thing, follow the smoke.
Yeah, I went when I was younger, actually. Was it always up Camp Creek?
No, they had Le Pere and Flat was our first one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was raining, and they was going to break up camp, and nobody wanted to leave, so we just stayed. That was awesome.
So, what was it like when you started weaving?
When I first started doing baskets and stuff, I'd go up the road. And they had hazel all along the road, so I'd go and cut that thing down and have it all, the new shoots and stuff. And I'd go to gather, and here's the state came through and cut it all down again. So I didn't even get it. It's a battle.
Yeah, anything along the roadside. The county comes and cuts all the roads every year, and they hadn't come out this year. I was like, well, maybe they won't. There's some maidenhair there I'd like to gather. And I came back a week later. They cut everything down. I was like, it was just an easy spot to go to. But it'd be cool if they could just hop over the spots that don't need to get cut back.
Put your little sign up there. If they know.
Yeah, if they know, they probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I should put some signs up and say, like, save this spot and then just hope.
Basket weaving material.
Yeah.
Is that something common that people do to indicate areas where you're gathering?
I haven't heard of it.
No.
Not really. I mean, then you just have to let everyone know that you gather there, which could be good or bad. Yeah, everyone else who gathers might be like, oh, is this a nice spot? And then you'd have to start sharing it. So depending on how big it is, that's could be good or bad. So people usually have their spots, and it's really word of mouth mostly, like when people have spots that they go to.
Yeah, I had a elderly man, Ernie, and he knew I was serious about basket weaving.
Mm-hmm.
Just Kathy's uncle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he took me up and showed me where to Black Furnace, it's just a few, just down, just beautiful. It's really hard to kind of open up to other people, just like Josephine Peters said. She used to teach about all these plants, medicine plants, basket, and she was showing people about it and teaching them about it. She went back to her area and somebody just came in and just wiped it all out. So it's kind of hard to share. Mm-hmm. I had a place up there, and down in there, I used to go out and cut these willows, and they'd be so thin and looked wispy.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, I said, this is my area. This is where I manicured stuff. And the woman, she came over and brought her class over and wiped it all out. After I told her, you know, this is... So it just kind of makes it kind of hard to share when somebody's so greedy like that. And then somebody went and bought the area and put a fence up on their pot. So I lost out there, too.
Is it okay if we talk about the Slater fire a little bit?
Uh-huh.
I was just going to ask about what caused such a fire.
Well, I already told you, when they had the first Slater fire, that whole place was burned, and they went in and planted all these trees, never came back and thinned them, and the brush came up, and they never, you know, it just let it
get thick.
Yeah, you could even walk through it, it got so bad. And that one ranger went up there, and he was burning that one side for our hazel, and then he'd burn the other side. And he was trying to burn the real bad side, but he left by then.
I don't think Anna knows, but Verna lived in Happy Camp last year, and her house had burned down in the Slater fire. So that was not even a year ago.
Yeah, in September.
Yeah, last September in Happy Camp.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so it's one of many. There's a lot of people lost their homes.
So that's why you're down in Orleans now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we was going to move down here anyway in due time, but it made it faster. Because the house that we bought was in bad shape. We was going to have it fixed before we moved down here, but We was one of the lucky ones. We had a place to go.
I mean, I'm glad you had a house.
Yeah. Yeah, I am too. Well, I furnished my house, most of it from yard sales. Yeah, it seemed like there was so much debris. It seemed like they would have had fire go through there. They'd burn it off. They don't do that. You know, it's just kind of common sense. It might they would. That fire is a good tool if they use it properly.
The longer you let it accumulate, the worse it's going to be. Yeah.
All they needed to do is go in there and start, you know, whacking some of that brush down and let it go with it. After that, it's going to go. And they usually plant way too many because things die.
This was all the Forest Service, too. Right. Yeah. Because it's pretty much all Forest Service managed land up there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there any other, like, barriers that you can think of that would keep folks from burning around here?
The barriers is this heat. A lot of the climate change will put a stop to a lot of burning because we can't take too much more of that.
And that's stuff that's changed over the years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to have wet weather come in, then we have thunderstorms, and then our little fires, and they put them out. And what's the nature. Yeah. But now you don't. There's no rain.
This last winter especially, we just didn't get so dry. We didn't get any rain, hardly. Little spurts here and there, but not.
Well, we're not even getting spurts. My dream is that they get, like, we don't have a bunch of basket weavers in this area. We're getting more. But they should kind of give them an area take care of. Like, if you know there's a nice place for hazel, cut down hazel is just as good as fire hazel. Fire hazel is probably more limber and stuff, but cut down is just as good. Where they can take care of an area for different materials. Like, even our food, acorns and stuff, they so much garbage on the ground for the acorn that the bugs just take over. So, I mean, if you have an area that you gather that stuff and you can allow to go in there and clean it out with fire, just that has to happen.
Because when it burns in the, like a wildfire, it's different than when you do prescribed fire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not as hot. It's just like a creeping. You know, like here, they just let it creep along. It just keeps the brush down and
keeps it open.
Bug-infested trees.
You said that your vision is to have an area that you can take care of, or that the basket weavers can take care of. Mm-hmm. And were you thinking that that would be something you'd want to collaborate with the Forest Service? Or is this something that would be on individual people's lands? Is the barrier that you're not having access to these huge areas of forest that the Forest Service manages? And where would that be?
I wouldn't know, but I sure would like to find out. You know, I don't, it's so much out here. It wouldn't hurt for them to allow the basket weavers or to have an area just to keep. If you look at any of our baskets, you get the ones in the museum, these beautiful, fine-made baskets. Well, these ladies manicured their area. They had their, and we didn't, another person didn't go in and get their stuff. Because they're the one that took care of it. So, makes a big difference on your material. You know when to burn, what. You know, you have to do it at different areas. You don't burn every year at one place. You can have a rotation, and you get better material. Depend on somebody else doing it for you. It doesn't work. You burn in the fall, well, we want it in the spring.
It's traditional, like what we would be doing anyways. You have an area that you're able to go in and do that all year round. You don't have ask permission or have anyone do it for you, or ask permission to get them to do it for you.
Yeah, whenever they feel like it, or not the right time, or it's always something It doesn't work. It will never work until the basket weaver can be rich enough to have a few acres and manicure it on that. But I mean, who can do that?
Even just to have 1 acre versus like to imagine trying to buy just the right piece of land to do that is near impossible.
Yeah, there's your barrier there. But the Forest Service has a lot of land that they're supposed to manage. So wouldn't hurt them to put a big plot for basket weavers to do their job, save them from having to do it.
Talking to you and talking about weaving
right now makes me want to go weave. I just want to like sit here and weave all day. That'd be really nice. When you start learning and you feel like you can do it, once you know how to do it, you just want to sit and do it, I feel like. So
yeah, if you want to be a Lisa. Oh my God, that girl is gung-ho and beautiful work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She just went on her own there. I didn't show her anything about porcupine quills and she went for it.
Yeah, she just picked it up on her own, just looking at it and figuring it out. Do you even know how many students you probably have out there
you've taught? I mean, the ones that keep it going. No, I had a cousin that moved from Florida back up here, and I taught her, and she makes caps, and she was a beader. She made beautiful beadwork and stuff. I think that had a lot to do with how she could size things and make things really pretty. She's still weaving, gathering. Again, I know a lot of people know how to weave. I've talked to them. Maggie was one of them. Yeah, she's a baby basket maker. You know, it's just, they have get up and go.
I mean, and that's the whole name following the smoke, right? Is you know where the fires are and you're going to go look at it after.
Yeah, I lucked out with, I have a husband that, you know, he'll take me. Yeah, he'll take me all over the place looking.
Oh, thank you, Verna.
Cool. That was painless.
Right? Yeah. Not so bad. No, it's just nice to talk.
Yeah.
We just had coffee and talked.
Yeah. Watch the squirrel jump up and down the tree.
Basket weavers teach confidence. Just go for it. Try new things. Be out there on the land. Take care of it and it will take care of you. Provide for you. Nourish you. Verna's late teachers, Grace and Madeline Davis, were known to be master weavers as well. Many students too. My teachers' teachers. Programs like Following the Smoke, which was a program started by other weavers of the past, like Laverne Glaze, continue the teachings of basket weaving, perpetuate it into the future, and teach how to take care of the land. The sharing and community weaving build is so important to the foundation of Burning. And I'm glad to show others how much love folks like Verna have for this important practice. This podcast episode is part of a mini-series called Intentional Fire Podcast and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to learn more about this topic, we invite you to listen to our other episodes. This podcast was made possible through a collaboration between the Kudyk Tribe and the Southwest CASC, with funding from the U.S. Geological Survey and the School of Natural Resources and Environment at the University of Arizona. This interview was conducted by Vicki Preston and Anna Mervite. The podcast was edited by Ellis Julin and Vicki Preston, and the drumbeat in the episode was from Brian Tripp, Kudyk. Thanks to the Kudyk Resources Advisory Board Review Committee, the Southwest CASC Fellows and Advisors. A special thank you to Stormy Stotts for the use of equipment. And thank you all for listening. Yotwa to everybody who supported and patiently waited for the completion of this podcast.